Welcome to Entrepreneurs the Playbook. I'm David Meltzer, and I am so blessed. When they talk about our future is so bright, it's not only bright, but it's delicious, and it takes amazing entrepreneurs, especially female entrepreneurs. For me, a big part of my journey, as you know, the biggest atrocity of entrepreneurship is less than 2% of women are funded. And a mission of mine is to bring and to elevate great women entrepreneurs like Somia Sober. Welcome, the CEO of Edible Brands. Welcome to the Playbook.
Thanks for having me, David. Excited for our conversation.
Oh, we're so excited to have you. And the Edible brand has grown and portfolio has grown. So I'd like to start there because a lot of people may not know all the different sub-brands that you have under Edible. Where exactly today are you with your portfolio of brands?
Yeah, it's grown significantly. So started out with Edible Arrangements, which many people know and love and have enjoyed back in the 90s. And it was a single product scaled from one location in East Haven, Connecticut to 500 locations within 5 years. Saw some really great growth at that time. And over the last few years, not only have we continued to amplify the core offering, the arrangements and the dipped fruit, the dipped strawberries, but we've also introduced new categories to Edible Arrangements. Think baked goods, fresh flowers, fun shelf-stable treats like chocolates and nuts, things that pair well with an arrangement, but also to create more reasons for customers to interact with the brand and use us. And then over the last year or so, we've launched two new brands within the Edible Brands portfolio. We launched edibles.com, which is a online marketplace for hemp, high quality hemp derived products. And we also acquired a Mediterranean fast casual concept called Roti Modern Mediterranean. So it's 17 locations across 3 states. And this is our foray into the fast casual space, which we're really excited about. So Edible Brands as a whole, it's really all about, food, gifting, health and wellness, good for you products. And it's exciting to see it go from, one core brand to three of these very strong consumer facing brands.
When I look at the success that you and your family have had, I think about when I was younger and was mentored by a man named Dr. Jacobs, who was CEO of Qualcomm at the time. And he toured me because I had the world's first convergence device, which was in 1999, a smartphone, but it was a Windows smartphone and, very early. But we walked around and looked at all this intellectual property that he had. And he said, David, do you know what business we're in? And I said, yeah, you're in the CDMA business, the chip business. He said, no. I own my customers. And he said, someday I can sell them insurance if I provide value to my customer base and grow. And when I look at what your family has done, you built a community, a culture, and now via your own capability of modernizing as a visionary, as a young woman CEO, truly modernizing that community that was built. I'm curious for you, where do you see the community today in combination with your capability, what I see as your superpower of modernizing the organization and positioning it for long-term scalable success?
Yeah, it's so interesting. And a lot of the community that we have, it's through our franchisees, right? So if you think about it, with Edible Arrangements, we've got 650 locations across the country. Almost all of them are franchised. They're, local entrepreneurs in their communities who are close to their customers. And it's really interesting because you see retail ebb and flow, right? Retail, when we launched, was very hot. There was a lot of interaction that happened in person. And then e-commerce took off in the 2010s and then got amplified during COVID, right? So during the pandemic, it was, why would I be walking into a retail location when I can get everything at my doorstep through same day delivery? But over the last couple of years, we've seen that our customers and people are craving those retail experiences, right? They want to be a part of, their community. They want to participate. So for me, I think, what's really important and where I feel like I'm able to bridge is I'm very close to that next generation of consumers that's coming in that we're trying to attract to Edible and to all of our brands. And that generation, they're looking for more personalized and customized experiences, right? They're looking at making an impact. And that's where I feel like, I've been able to really help out, even whether it's, looking at the different products that we offer, How do we create something that is relevant to that new customer that we want to bring in? And not just them, but also their parents and grandparents, right? So if I think about my parents, they want to know what is the cool it thing that their grandchildren want that they should be buying for them. But yeah, I feel like, you know, from an age perspective and where I am in my life stage, it's very similar to the customers that we're trying to bring in, which helps, you know, from an innovation perspective significantly.
You know, it's also interesting. I've kind of lucked out in my career where sports, my original career with Lee Steinberg, there was no sports management programs and all these things. And then as my career grew, all of a sudden every college had to have a sports program.
Yeah.
You went to Babson, which has always been the most entrepreneurial, the leader in entrepreneurship. And then over the last decade, branding myself in entrepreneurial beyond the sports space, every single college needs to have an entrepreneur program.
Really?
And yet you were born into a very entrepreneurial family. You were around and surrounded by entrepreneurship and a successful business. But yet I found it interesting that you still went to college. Not surprised you went to Babson, but how much did that experience, because I'm always curious in your generation today, how valuable is college if you choose the right social life, the right subjects and topics to study? What was your experience, and do you encourage people? Would you encourage people still to go to college?
For me, 15 years ago, when I was applying to colleges, 1000% yes. And I would say the same now, especially if you look at a school like Babson College, where they are so focused on more practical learning, right? So for example, my first semester, 18 years old, we're launching businesses. You know, we're getting funding from the school and we are coming up with business ideas. We're doing pitches. We're building out budgets. And this is before you even know the how, right? And you're kind of just figuring it out. So for me, that experience was really nice because my view into entrepreneurship was more the operator side, right? It was seeing my dad build store locations, work with franchisees. I think where Babson and college really helped me was add more of the strategic angle, right? Understanding, you know, business strategy, building on financial acumen, really thinking about org design differently, right? So that's where, you know, my dad and I, we work very well together because he's got amazing ideas. He's visionary. He's an operator at heart. He's an operational person, whereas me, I drive more of the strategy and the design, right? So I can take an idea that he has and operationalize it with very strong KPIs and metrics. So, you know, for anyone thinking about higher education and what it means to them, a lot of it for me is really when I talk to students who are going through that now, or even my younger siblings, it's about, you know, what do you hope to learn, right? And is this place that you're going to go, is that going to help add something to your toolkit that's going to be valuable for you in your career?
And that's with said, the social life, in which I encourage my three daughters. I have four kids, a son who's 15, but my older daughters, in fact, my oldest works for me and had worked other places before she graduated business school. And I felt a little bit worried about the pressure of working with me two ways. And I'm curious if you ever felt this. One, that you wanted to do it yourself and that people feel as if, you know, you're cheating yourself because you have so much potential going to work with your family or your dad. But then two, the other side of it, just the challenge of living up to higher expectations. How'd you deal with those two pressures? One, with people like, oh, you're going to work for your dad. You know, you can't do it on your own. And then two, you know, I think the more pressure is living up to the legacy. I'm very conscious of my daughter of not putting too much pressure on her.
Yeah, I'll tell you on the first question of, you know, or you're going to work for your dad or in your family business, what has always helped me is I don't have to, right? If I wanted to go get a job somewhere else, I could. And I know I could, right?
Yeah, come work for me, by the way, anytime you want. You're hired.
Thank you. For me, it's more, you know, I want to be here. I want to take something that my dad has built and grow it for that next generation, right? So in the beginning, I did struggle with it a little bit, especially being, you know, at my age and a lot of the people I work with are my peers. They're older than me. They're in a different life stage. But so it took a little bit of time, but a lot of it was just reminding myself that I'm an expert in this business, right? I've grown up in it. I've seen it, you know, scale firsthand. I have worked in our stores. I've dipped strawberries. I've wrapped arrangements. I've done deliveries, right? I've done all of that. I've paid my dues. So it's been a journey getting here, but it's been an earned and deserved journey, right? So that just constantly reminding myself, that's very important. And then second, you know, in terms of pressure, there's always pressure, but I'll tell you, there's a lot of encouragement to offset that pressure, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I got this, I can do it. I hear that from my dad. I hear that from family members. I hear that from my team, right? I've surrounded myself with a very strong team, which is that's how I'm able to do everything that I do. It's always in the back of your mind, but at the same time, if you have the right support system, anything's possible.
And, you know, having in delivering what you do through the franchise model is so powerful, especially today. And I'm just curious, as a playbook to success, you're an innovator. You are bringing a different perspective for the future, a scalable methodology to the business. And there's a variety of different options and opportunities. But AI, I'm sure, is playing an integral role in your plans. And you have a better grip than my generation. As much as I practice AI, I know, you know, I'm getting closer probably to where your dad is in the business, or if he's not already there. For you, what are some of the key capabilities of AI that you're looking at that would be applicable to other business owners or franchise owners that really are going to make a game-changing effect or impact?
That's a great question. And I feel like there's so many ways to go with AI, and it's so broad, and there's already so many different tools and platforms for us to use, right? The market's already so saturated with different programs. So the way we've done it here is we've kind of broken it up into three categories. One is just simple replacing. Are there tasks or things that are happening today in different teams that can be automated, right? That could be something as simple as, and our legal and compliance team actually sees a lot of this happening, where we've been able to hold on hiring additional paralegals because there's work that our enterprise AI tools can help us with. So that's one. Two would be finding additional efficiencies, right? So a lot of that comes with, you know, franchise operations, for example. How do we start to find efficiencies in how we work with our franchisees, or how our franchisees can access information? And, you know, what tools do we need to build on different AI programs and platforms that might exist? And then the third is innovation, right? So we're talking, you know, how do we, what do we do with, you know, is there an opportunity with Meta glasses, for example, in training, right? Something big and something bold and different. Is there a way for us to better track inventory where, you know, a general manager puts on a headset and he can just chat through what's in his walk-in cooler, right? So that's more of the fun, innovative stuff. And setting the structure up where it's, hey, it's really these three things: efficiencies for things we do today, how do we, you know, create better operational processes, and then how do we really innovate with AI? It's helped us prioritize better, right? Because I'd love to jump straight to let's do a project with the glasses, but we're not there yet, right? We have to work our way there. We have to start small and then make incremental changes in order to get to the bigger stuff. Because the other part that's important too is your data needs to be structured for those big innovative items as well. So it's, you know, a lot of different work streams and workflows going on. You know, we've also created an AI acceptable use policy for all of our employees and our teams, because not all of these platforms are confidential, right? We want to use the platforms that we've have enterprise contracts with. So it's a learning process, right? We're learning as we go. We're trying to move as quickly as we can. And I like having, you know, a tie-in with Babson College, because I feel like I learn so much from students on what they're using and how they're using it. So even though I'm closer in age to them, this is an area where, you know, I feel like I'm also playing catch up in a sense.
Yeah, I think everybody does, because it moves so quickly. And, you know, I'm focused on, you know, mirroring capabilities, and AI allows us to go from 0 to 1 faster than 1 to 100. And that 0 to 1 is costly, as you know, especially in the business that I'm in. Let's finish up with feelings. And so, you know, I talk about enjoying what we don't like or love about what we love. And I use as an example, I was a below a below average college football player because I love football, but there was a lot that I didn't like or love about what I loved, you know, not playing, the taping and the film, like the amount of time, all that stuff sucked. What is it that you've had to learn to love about what you do?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm an introvert.
Really?
Not. Yeah. Public speaking, not my thing. Never enjoyed it. Right. I love my job. I love what I do every day. I love working with my team. I love innovation. I love having strategy sessions, but as soon as there's opportunities, even like this one, or, you know, where I have to speak out, it takes a lot of energy, and it takes a lot of, you know, reminding myself that I can do this, but also think about, you know, that young woman of color who's sitting in the audience who just needs a little bit of inspiration. Right. So I've had to like dig really deep to get comfortable getting out there more and not just staying in my shell, because one, as a CEO, I have to represent the brand, but then two, just do it in hopes that I'm inspiring, you know, the next generation of female leaders.
Well, you are going to have more invitations from me to make you uncomfortable, because we would love to have you at the Titan, a Titan on Go Fund Yourself, our number one show on Cheddar, or 2 Minute Drill, or Office Hours. You are going to be a great co-host with us.
Love it.
As long as your time affords you, you're always invited. What an incredible entrepreneur. How lucky is her family to have such an amazing daughter, but even more importantly, amazing leader. Apples must not fall far from the tree. I'm going to show my daughter this episode. All three of them, by the way, even the two that don't want to work with me, the smarter ones, this. So Mia Sober, I can't wait to see what you do next. CEO at Edible Brands, a true entrepreneur, someone who's making a lot of money for the sake of helping a lot of people, and she's still having a lot of fun. Thanks for joining me. I'm David Meltzer. This is Entrepreneurs, the Playbook.